we come presenting the founder and the president of the most significant Southern Christian Leadership Conference, having its inspiration come out of the Montgomery Association, which was spurred into being by the heroic action of a great African Methodist woman, Rosa Parks of Montgomery. We come presenting a great American. And as we present him, we list the fact that it's generally known that he is a PhD. He has a PhD degree from Boston University in the field of systematic theology, that he has joined many of us who sit here tonight in witnessing by going to jail, and certainly by sending his famous letter from the Birmingham jail. We present a man with a dream similar to that of the ancient prophets, given in a new setting, which stated that every mountain shall be level and every valley shall be exalted. We come presenting a great civil rights leader. But what's perhaps more important is that he is identified with the average man of the mill, the man of the valley, the man of the hill, the man at the throttle, the man at the plow, the man with the fruit of his toil on his brow. We present to you at this time a great leader, Martin Luther King. Let us receive him.
To the distinguished bishops of this great church, and to all of the general officers and delegates, and to this general conference of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, ladies and gentlemen, after listening to the glowing words of my good friend Fred James, I feel something like the old maid who had never been married. She went to work one day, and the lady for whom she worked said, "Ann, I hear you are getting married." She looked up and said, "No, I'm not getting married, but thank God for the rumor." Now, all of these marvelous things that he has said about me can't be true, but thank God for the rumor. I really don't have adequate words to express the deep joy that comes to my heart tonight in having the privilege to come here to be a part of this great and significant meeting. I guess there are many things that one could say tonight as we think about this difficult problem of racial injustice which pervades our nation. But I would like to have you think with me for the moments left from the subject, remaining awake through a great revolution. Many of you, I'm sure, have read that very interesting an arresting story by Washington Irving entitled Rip Van Winkle. The thing that we usually remember about this story is that Rip Van Winkle slept 20 years. But that is another point in that story that is almost always completely overlooked. It was a sign on the inn in the little town on the Hudson, from which Rip went up into the mountain for his long sleep. When he went up, the sign had a picture of King George III of England. When he came down 20 years later, the sign had a picture of George Washington, the first president of the United States.
That's right.
When Rip Van Winkle looked up at the picture of George Washington, he was amazed. He knew not who he was. This reveals to us that the most striking thing about the story of Rip Van Winkle is not merely that he slept 20 years, but that he slept through a revolution.
Yes, sir.
While he was peacefully... while he was peacefully snoring up on the mountain, a great revolution was taking place that would change the face of the earth. And Rip knew nothing about it. He was asleep. One of the great liabilities of history is the fact that all too many people find themselves sleeping through great periods of social change, and they fail to achieve the mental attitudes that the new conditions and new situations demand.
All right.
In a real sense, that is nothing more tragic than to sleep through a revolution. Certainly a great revolution is going on in our world today. Is sweeping away an old order, bringing into being a new order. We see it in Asia and Africa as we listen from afar to the deep rumblings of discontent. I remember when we attended the independence celebration of the new nation of Ghana back in 1957. That night when the new nation was to come into being, we stood there in the midst of some 200,000 people. We noticed a handsome black man as he came out to the platform, stood before his people, and as he stood there, Kwame Nkrumah said, "We are now a free and independent nation." And at that point, I looked over and I saw an old flag coming down. It was the Union Jack flag. And I saw a new flag going up, the flag of the new nation of Ghana. And I looked around and said to my wife and Congressman Adam Powell and Dr. Ralph Bunch, who was standing nearby, that this is not merely a symbol of a meaningless drama taking place on the stage of history. That old flag coming down is the symbol of an old order passing away.
Yes, sir.
And that new flag, that new flag going up is a symbol of a new age coming into being. And since that dark night in March of 1957, some 27 new independent countries have come into being in Africa. This is a great revolution that has taken place in the world. It's taken place in the United States. We need not look very far to see that, because we are all participants in this magnificent drama that has taken place. It is sweeping away the old order of segregation and paternalism, bringing in the new order of justice and integration. And I am convinced as I stand before you tonight that the system of segregation is on its deathbed, and the only thing I'm certain about it The only thing uncertain about it is how costly the segregationists will make the funeral. So a great revolution has taken place in our nation and in the world. But we are challenged as concerned citizens, we are challenged as Christians to remain awake through this great revolution. And I would like to suggest some of the things that we must do in order to remain awake through this great social revolution. First, we must continue to affirm the immorality of racial segregation. Anyone who feels that racial segregation is right is sleeping through a revolution. Somehow we must come to see that integration is more than something that's taken place in a sort of sociological changing sense. Great theologians, when they've talked about God, have usually gotten around to the point of saying that even God works toward integration. Henry met Nelson Wyman defined God, he said he's a process of integration. And Alfred North Whitehead defined God, he said he's a principle of concretion. And Paul Tillich defined God, he said he's being itself. When Jan Smuts defined God, he said he's a process of holism. And whenever we think of God, we think of a being working to bring the disconnected aspects of reality into a harmonious whole. One great theologian has said that sin is separation. And what is segregation but the existential expression of man's tragic separation, his awful estrangement, his terrible sinfulness? And so segregation is not only politically unsound, segregation is not only sociologically untenable, segregation is morally wrong and sinful. Segregation is wrong, to use the words of the great Jewish philosopher Martin Buber, because it substitutes an I-it relationship for the I-thou relationship. Segregation is wrong because it is nothing but a new form of slavery covered up with certain niceties of complexity. Segregation is wrong because it assumes that God made a mistake and infiltrated the very being of certain people with a tragic yoke of inferiority. Segregation is wrong because it is a system of adultery perpetuated by an illicit relationship between injustice and immorality. All over this land, all over this nation, we must make it clear that we will no longer sell our birthright of freedom for a mess of segregated parties. We must make it clear. We must make it clear that we are through with segregation now, henceforth, and forevermore. Now, second thing that I would like to say is this. We must make full and creative use of the freedom we already possess. This means even though we have not yet reached the promised land of freedom. We must work hard to achieve excellence in our various fields of endeavor. Now we have a problem here, a real dilemma. And I don't think many of our white brothers realize the great dilemma that we face. As I hear them talking from time to time, it's a real dilemma. What is that dilemma? We were the victims through our foreparents of slavery for 244 years. Yeah. And then another 100 years of segregation. Yeah. And now the forces of history demand that we be as productive, that we be as resourceful as the individuals who have never known such oppression and discrimination. This is our dilemma. What is our dilemma? It is simply this. He who gets behind in a race must forever remain behind or run faster than the man in front. That's our dilemma. And so I'm not unmindful of this dilemma, but it must serve as a challenge. We must go all out now to work hard. If we are young and in school, we must burn the midnight oil. We must go all out to develop our inner powers and our talent. Doors are opening now. Doors of opportunity are opening now that were not open to our mothers and fathers. The great challenge facing us is to be ready to enter these doors as they open. Ralph Waldo Emerson said in a lecture back in 1871 that if a man can write a better book, or preach a better sermon, or make a better mousetrap than his neighbor, even if he builds his house in the woods, the world will make a beaten path to his door. This will become increasingly true. And so we must set out to do a good job, to do that job so well that nobody could do it any better. We must not set out merely to do a good Negro job. Anybody that sets out to do that is sleeping through a revolution. As I've said so often, one sets out merely to be a good Negro doctor, a good Negro lawyer, a good Negro school teacher, a good Negro preacher, a good Negro skilled laborer, a good Negro barber, a beautician. You've already flunked your matriculation exam for entrance into the University of Integration. We must set out to do a good job and do that job so well that the living, the dead of unborn couldn't do it any better. So if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, go on out and sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. Sweep streets like Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. Sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. Yes, if you can't be a pine on the top of the hill, be a scrub in the valley. But be the best little scrub on the side of the reel. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. We will do this. We will remain awake through a great revolution. Next, if we are to remain awake through this great revolution, we must see the necessity for developing an action program to get rid of the last vestiges of segregation and discriminate. Now, if anybody here this evening feels that this problem will work itself out and that we should just sit around and wait on time to solve it, I hate to tell you, but you're sleeping through a revolution.
Yes, sir! Go ahead.
Some people sincerely believe that. I must say to you tonight, my friend, that history is the long and sometimes tragic story of the fact that privileged groups never give up their privileges voluntarily and without strong resistance.
Yes, sir. Yes.
History is the long and tragic story of the fact that groups rarely do this. Sometimes individuals see the moral light and decide to change and pull their brother along with them. But Reinhold Niebuhr has reminded us in his book, Moral Man and Immoral Society, that groups are a little more immoral and naughty than individuals. We've got to come to see that freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. So we must see the need for a strong action program. We must continue to engage in protest activities. We must continue to seek to gain the ballot in large numbers, for I'm still convinced that one of the most significant steps that the Negro can take at this hour is that short walk to the voting booth. We must continue to pool our economic resources. And more we must come to the point that we will say to industry, if you are going to respect my dollar, you must respect my person. And if you are not willing to provide jobs for Negroes, then we will just withdraw our economic support, and through selective buying programs, we will bring them in line. We must continue to work through the courts. We must continue to work through nonviolent direct action. Let nobody fool you. I hear the talk about demonstrations, and there are those who are trying to say we should stop demonstrating. Well, I must remind you tonight that is a debate taking place in Congress concerning a vital civil rights bill. And that bill just didn't fall out of thin air. It came as a result of demonstrations. I would remind you that segregation has about ended in public transportation. In all but a few communities, in some Mississippi places in Alabama, but on the whole, in public transportation, we have almost total integration. But I would remind you that this came as a result of demonstration.
That's right.
Some 350 southern cities since 1960 have integrated their lunch counters and hotels and restaurants. But I must remind you tonight that came through demonstration. And so it is so often to bring these issues to the surface and bring them out into the open where everybody can see them through demonstrations. And so all of these methods are necessary as we work on in the days ahead. We must develop an action program. Now let me say just a word about the civil rights bill in the Senate. We must somehow get it over that this bill must pass, and they've been debating on it a little too long now. It's no longer legitimate debate.